That's probably an hour and a half. Is it just the three of us?
No, Randy's supposed to be here.
Okay. Well, we can begin. So how many, before I gavel us into an official start of the meeting, how many of you have been to the city council before to either observe, to first observe, raise your hand, and to testify? Okay. And how many of you have signed up to testify outside? That's the way you do it? Okay. When you testify, your name will be called in the order in which you signed up by Sue, our excellent council clerk. She'll call three names, and you'll come up to the table. You give us your first and last name. We don't want your address. No address. First and last name. But we do want you to disclose, and you're required to disclose, if you're representing, if you're acting on behalf of another entity as a lobbyist. So if you represent a business, we need to know the name of the business. If you're an official spokesperson for a community group, we need to know that. If you're just here to talk and you belong to a community group, we don't need to know that. But if you're the official spokesperson, we want to know that. We'll start out with 3 minutes, but if the night wears on too long, we might go to, and you're further down the list, we might move to a shorter amount of time. We have learned in our years of experimentation that what can be said in 3 minutes usually can be said really well in 2 to 1 minute. But you have three. You have three. And with that, I will gavel us into order. Portland City Council will come to order. It is Wednesday, September 15th, 2010. It is 6 p.m. Sue, would you please call the roll?
Saltzman. Leonard.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Adams.
Here.
Quorum is present. We will proceed. We have one item on the agenda this evening. It is a time certain. It is a resolution. Item number 1270, and can you please read the title?
Authorized petition to the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to implement an alcohol impact area in the downtown Portland area on behalf of the City of Portland.
And I apologize in advance. Some of us have to eat our dinner in front of you. It's been a long day.
Some of us are much better tempered if we eat.
We want Commissioner Leonard to eat, believe me. We do. And with that, I'll turn it over to Commissioner Amanda Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor Adams, and thank you, everybody, for being out on this rather rainy night to talk about this very important issue. The Oregon Liquor Control Commission has provided a tool for jurisdictions with populations of at least 300,000. I wonder how many of those there are in Oregon. Just us. To address serious alcohol-related issues in a given area by applying uniform limitations and requirements that specify how alcohol may be sold in the area. This tool is known as the Alcohol Impact Area, which you may hear referenced tonight as AIA, but I'll try to use the full term. It's initiated by a petition from the City of Portland to the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. Based on reports from the Portland Police Bureau, over a half of drinking in public citations are in the downtown area. And drinking in public is illegal in the City of Portland. Outside of designated areas, that is. This problem prompted the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, along with the Portland Police Bureau, to initiate a petition to the OLCC for an alcohol impact area in the downtown core. There has been a tremendous amount of staff, time, and public outreach that occurred to carry out the requirements established in state law for establishing an impact area. I especially thank Amy Archer, the Office of Neighborhood Involvement Livability Manager, Teresa Marchetti, the ONI Liquor Control Licensing Specialist, Stephanie Reynolds in ONI, Charles Harris in the Portland Police Bureau's Drugs and Vice Liquor Licensing Investigator, Frank Silver, ONI Crime Prevention, Officer Hillary Scott in Portland Police Bureau Neighborhood Response Team, Jenny Melius, Portland Police Bureau Crime Analyst, Officer Joe Chirella from the Neighborhood Response Team, and also Sergeant Mark Friedman, Mike Boyer from the ONI Crime Prevention Coordinator, and Richard Kepler, Portland Police Bureau Crime Analyst, also Sarah Hussein and Tom Bizzo in my office. As you can see, there's been a lot of staff time put into this so far. We've had over 65 community meetings with community, neighborhood, and stakeholder groups. One of the prerequisites for attempting to establish an alcohol impact area is attempting to establish voluntary compliance. Staff will cover what that entailed, the results of that effort, and why it has led us here today. Essentially, due to the lack of stores willing to volunteer, the City of Portland is petitioning to the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to create an alcohol impact area in downtown Portland in order to decrease street drinking and crimes related to public intoxication to improve the livability and safety of Portland. This resolution is a required step in the process of getting a petition to OLCC for their consideration and approval. I'm asking the council to approve the petition for the AIA so we can then move it forward to the OLCC. It's important to note that the Oregon Liquor Control Commission makes the final decision, not the City Council, so there will be further opportunities to amend the proposal should it be passed by council tonight. There may be some amendments contemplated tonight in response to testimony, and I would like to do this in is to have a staff presentation and then clarifying questions from my colleagues, but not discussion, so that we can move right as quickly as possible to citizen testimony. We'll then get staff response to citizen testimony and then have council further questions and discussion and hopefully move to a vote tonight. Another approach, in addition, as well as amendments that we could consider tonight, would be to have a separate memorandum approved as to the content of the petition by council, which could then be forwarded to the OLCC. And now I invite Central Precinct Commander Vince Jarma, Officer Mark Friedman, and Teresa Marchetti of the Office of Neighborhood Involvement to come forward to discuss the details of this resolution and petition. Thank you all for your work on this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, council members, thank you for this opportunity to be here on behalf of Chief Mike Reese. The Portland Police Bureau has worked extensively with ONI, the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, and on the livability and public safety issues related to street drinking. And as you've mentioned, we've dedicated many resource hours to informal means of problem solving, including being a resource for good neighbor agreements, actively engaging the community in the Vibrant effort, which was, as you may recall, was a voluntary effort that you mentioned, and by responding to numerous calls for service that are associated with the abuse of alcohol on downtown streets. The Portland Police Bureau supports moving forward to the OLCC with a petition for rulemaking, allowing the state agency with the regulatory authority to further analyze these issues. The Bureau would ask for the support of the council in this effort as a way to do a couple of things. One is to reduce our police calls for service. Another is to better manage downtown livability issues. And a third would be to better manage our own police resources. We understand that this will be an extensive process, and it could be some time before this area-wide strategy would be in effect if accepted tonight. We will continue to work with the tools that we do have to address these ongoing issues in the meantime. However, given the current resource issues facing all city bureaus, we are continuously striving to innovate and better utilize the resources we do have in an efficient and effective manner. The Bureau also understands that many issues are intertwined with the specific issue of drinking on the street, which include homelessness, drug abuse, and the like. We also acknowledge that this resolution will not fix all the problems. It is, however, a giant step toward a better downtown. The resolution before you today will ask OLCC to consider the banning of products in certain sizes that have been demonstrated to contribute substantially to the problem of street drinking. There's a significant amount of past and present resources, which I will ask Acting Sergeant Friedman to illuminate, that are spent on the issue of street drinking that could potentially be dedicated to more immediate public safety issues. This is an untried tool and one that has the potential to help us maintain high standards of responsiveness to the Portland community. And I would recommend approval of this resolution so that all citizens of the city and visitors to the city can enjoy a cleaner, safer, and more enjoyable downtown. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and City Council. And I'd like to turn this over to Officer Friedman, Sergeant Friedman.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Mayor, City Commissioners.
My name is Mark Friedman, and I served as the neighborhood response team officer in the downtown Old Town Chinatown neighborhoods for the last 3.5 years. Part of my job as a neighborhood response team officer is to work very closely with citizens, residents, businesses, and neighborhood associations to problem solve chronic criminal behavior and livability issues, which are chronic in nature, in the neighborhoods that I'm asked to work with. The majority of the chronic complaints that I dealt with in my experience working in the neighborhood response team in the downtown Old Town Chinatown neighborhood specifically were lower level order maintenance type complaints that I got from the folks that I've already talked about, citizens, residents, business owners, business associations, neighborhood associations. Many of those incidents and types of calls involve trespassing many times in result of people who were too inebriated to care for themselves, passed out in doorways, hostile, belligerent, and aggressive behavior that was displayed by individuals who were intoxicated. I like to call those antisocial behaviors because many times we try to give them other labels like aggressive panhandling when, in fact, sometimes the behavior displayed by these individuals who are inebriated and intoxicated don't fall to the point where they're considered criminal offenses. However, they do concern people and make them fearful for their safety when they're displayed. The other issues that are directly related to intoxication and inebriation are trash, litter, defecation, and urination. And those types of complaints came to me on a daily basis from people that I was asked to help solve problems with. Like I said, I've been a police officer for 12 years. 10.5 of those years have been in the downtown neighborhood, 3.5 years as a neighborhood response team. And during that entire experience, I think it's fair to say that many of these incidents involve intoxication and inebriation. A substantial amount of limited police resources is dedicated to individuals engaged in criminal and or antisocial behaviors, which are aggravated by intoxication and inebriation. The numbers sort of speak for themselves. I'll touch on them briefly. In 2009, we had 1,732 incidents of public drinking in the area that we've defined as the alcohol impact area. That represents 53% of all the calls for the entire city for that type of criminal behavior. 1,650 civil detox holds were placed on people in that same area in 2009, and that represents 31% of the city's sobering holds that we placed on people. I brought with me, I just had this put together, this is a 30-day, this stack of paper represents a 30-day period of police reports that Central Precinct police officers put time into to prepare that are for drinking in public and for drinking in parks in the areas that were defined by the alcohol impact area. It's a substantial amount of police resources and time that gets put into preparing this, not to mention the criminal justice system having to process this and officers needing to show up and testify in court ultimately to put these to rest. It does not include public inebriation that results in a detox hold. And that actually takes more time. When we take folks to detox, it requires custody, it requires time to transport people over to Hooper Detox, and then time to admit them into the system. And that does take a considerable amount of time away from officers being able to do other things during their shift. So, like I said, I think the numbers speak for themselves. It's a substantial problem, and it's aggravated significantly by the availability of some of the beverages that we're talking about restricting. Another big thing we talk about in the police bureau is not only actual crime, but the fear of crime and public's perception of crime. And in my experience working in the neighborhood response team, I heard from a lot of business owners, a lot of visitors to the city, a lot of residents about their fear of coming into the downtown area because of antisocial behavior displayed by people who are intoxicated or inebriated on the street. That's a serious concern to us. It's a serious concern that I think we address through this alcohol impact area. And if we can turn that around, I think we make downtown a much more livable place, a much better place for people to visit, to spend their money, to enjoy themselves. So the goal of this alcohol impact area is to reduce street drinking. And if we reduce street drinking, we have more time for police officers to direct their police patrols, given the substantial reduction in time that they have to spend dealing with street inebriates and their resulting bad behavior. There's less trash, less litter, and finally, increased public perception of safety in the downtown area. I thank you for your time, and I'm certainly welcome any questions that you have.
If I could, before you two go too far, is to thank you for your work in this area, and especially 3 years as the NERD officer in Old Town Chinatown it's a great part of town, but I can only imagine what your daily work life is like. So I just wanted to underscore my thanks to both of you. In terms of the public drinking and a question that I've been asked, you know, how is it that the availability in your mind actually cuts down on the prevalence of public drunkenness? Won't they just go somewhere? I've been asked questions. Won't they just go somewhere else?
Teresa's going to cover this in her.
Won't they just go somewhere else? So I just want your professional opinion.
I think it's fair to say that there will be some dispersion of folks that will take the time to travel outside the area to obtain the beverages that meet their needs. However, I also think that they're so readily available in the downtown core at the package stores that in some regards, I think we actually draw folks in from other parts of the city to downtown because the product's available where it's not available in other places in the city, simply because there is no demand for it. So you have a demand situation downtown where there's a strong demand for the product line. So that has contributed, I think, in some respects to the issue of people obtaining these products. If they're no longer available, I think that other stores, the density of the downtown core, the number of stores, with the density of stores outside of the downtown core, we're able to address those stores, I think, on a little more individual basis than we are in downtown as well.
Thank you. So, Mayor, if I could ask a couple questions, too. So this would be the first alcohol impact area in Oregon. And you're looking at this from a law enforcement point of view and trying to predict how this might affect behavior. Have you checked with other jurisdictions outside of Oregon to find out how their alcohol impact areas have worked and gotten some intelligence from them?
We have. Teresa will speak about that a little bit more in depth. However, Washington State, I believe there are 13 alcohol impact areas in the Washington State area. And Tacoma, we looked at specifically. We also looked at Seattle and what Seattle did and how effective it was. And in some regards, where their shortfalls were and trying, they've since corrected those, but rather than making the same mistakes they've made, we're kind of learning from their mistakes and have tweaked our agreement so that it mirrors some of their experience with their alcohol impact area as well.
Mayor Adams and commissioners, thank you guys very much for being here tonight. I do appreciate it. I'm Teresa Marchetti. I'm with the Office of Neighborhood Involvement Liquor Licensing. I have worked extensively with Officer Mark Friedman and the rest of the members of the alcohol impact area to try to get at the root issues of what may be contributing to the problem with street drinking that we see in the downtown area. And actually, if I can, I'm going to go ahead and pass this out to you. Probably one, we're here to ask approval to take a petition for rulemaking to the OLCC, essentially starting the process of implementing an alcohol impact area. The reason that this is necessary is because, first of all, it is the only tool that's available that is enforceable and that is state-sanctioned to address systemic alcohol problems that are related to the sale of alcohol and that are also aggravated by the sale of alcohol. In this case, at off-premise license locations, which means places that sell alcohol to go in packaged containers. The other reason that it is so appropriate for this area is because this is a unique situation that we face, where there is a strong saturation of both problems and licensees within this area. Our bureau philosophy as the Office of Neighborhood Involvement is to try to problem solve things at the lowest possible level, and we have done that in these areas. There have been small area concentrated good neighbor agreements. There has been individual problem solving. We've also attempted to address some of them through the time, place, and manner ordinance, which is our local tool. However, all of those things have not been effective in making any strong, substantial changes in this area. The most recent is the Vibrant PDX effort. The Vibrant PDX effort was a larger effort to address the alcohol-related issues specific to street drinking. It's also a prerequisite for petitioning to the OLCC. From August of last year until June of this year, we worked very hard to engage community stakeholders, licensees, any kind of stakeholder groups that would potentially have interest or feedback for us. We attended 67 public meetings, attended and held, personally visited each licensee, and we made every effort to respond to the issues that were raised to us, including, and finally, shortening the initial voluntary participation to 3 months. In the end, what we had was 9 stores that willingly signed a voluntary agreement. What I heard most often was, "I'll be the last signature." And the reason for that is understandable. There is such a density of stores here that if their next-door neighbor did not sign on or signed on and didn't agree, first of all, we couldn't enforce that, because it's a voluntary effort. And secondly, it doesn't make any changes, but it does adversely impact the people who were trying to act in good faith. So I could understand where they were coming from. Additionally, the financial impact involved. And I do understand that there is the potential for some financial impact. Our research and what we've seen in the alcohol impact areas in Washington have shown no significant financial impact. And you may hear some of that tonight. But I also want to reiterate that there's been a huge burden on the businesses and the community within downtown Portland for 2 decades. 1 decade that we have gone back in statistics to show you tonight that the drinking in public has remained between 49 and 58% citywide since the year 2000, despite our best efforts. However, despite the overall failure of Vibrant, and it was, the feedback and the changes that we made through that process have provided some guidance for us for this alcohol impact area and for the recommendations that are here. First of all, the boundaries of the proposed alcohol impact area have changed or changed throughout the Vibrant agreement. The initial boundary that we proposed encompassed under the 405. But because of the feedback that we got from licensees and because it actually made most sense, we expanded it to also include the fact that there was a concentration of both licensees and problems going up the Burnside corridor. In fact, council recognizes the alcohol impact area on Burnside corridor in our own city code. Unfortunately, that doesn't come with any restrictions at the state. So after the initial 3 public meetings that we held, we did expand the boundaries, and with good cause. In 2009 alone, this particular area, which only makes up 1.2% of the total city land mass, has 58% of drinking in public, 30% of police-initiated detox, and also is 60% of 60% of the admittees at the Hooper Detoxification Center are taken from this area. The boundaries are included in the PowerPoint for you to look over, and they're also visually represented here for council and over here for the public. Essentially, they encompass the Downtown Neighborhood Association, the Old Town Chinatown Neighborhood Association, parts of the Pearl, the Goose, and the Goose Hollow Neighborhood Association, and also the Northwest Neighborhood Association. There have been concerns that the boundaries are still too small. In fact, there was some feedback from licensees that they would only support the voluntary initiative or an alcohol impact area if it was citywide or statewide. And there is just no mechanism to allow us to do that. What we have here is a unique situation with concentration, and that's what we're trying to get at. There will always be additional licensees on the other side of the boundary. What we're hoping for here and what we can see is that by addressing the density, when we get to the areas that are not part of the alcohol impact area, we will be better able to address them on an individual level. So the purpose of the alcohol impact area is not only to reduce the alcohol-related crime and the livability and public safety issues, but also to recognize that we have a pervasive problem of street drinking in this area. Ultimately, what it will do is require that off-premise liquor license locations limit products that are favored for consumption on the street. Part of the requirement of this rule as well is that the language is backed up by documentation of the problem. And in order to do that, we partnered with Portland Patrol Incorporated, which is a security company in the downtown area. We wanted to get a really good understanding of what does drinking in public look like in this area. We already know it's a problem, but what does it look like? And those security officers were able to contact people who were drinking in public. These reports were not always associated with the citation if an officer was not available, but they were able to document what they were drinking, in most cases where they had bought their alcohol. And from that information, we were able to deduce a few things. First of all, that 87% of incidents are associated with malt beverages, 11% with wine, and 2% with distilled spirits. There are the licensees that are covered by the requirements of the alcohol impact area. There are 43 off-premise license locations that also have a market convenience or market grocery operation. Through our partnership with PPI, which is Portland Patrol Incorporated, we were able to find the most prolific places that that people who choose to drink on the street were purchasing their alcohol. The licensees that are not covered by the requirements of the alcohol impact area are the 237 licensed locations with any other type of liquor license, restaurants, hotels that operate with full on-premise, which is a full bar license, a limited on-premise, which is a beer and wine, and a number of other ones as well. There are 40 off-premise license locations that are also not associated. These ones also either hold a full on-premise or limited on-premise liquor license. Hotels and restaurants that hold an off-premise license for the allowance for wine to be sold, to be taken home. That B operate as an internal gift shop with no direct street entrance. The reason, again, being that these places were not shown to be contributors to the problem. And C, specialty wine stores that where 50% of their overall inventory is 50% or more of their overall inventory is wine. There are 9 of these stores in this area. And again, this was because through our research, these particular operations did not contribute to the problem. Essentially, what we found was that 95% of incidents are associated with market operations, and that means market convenience or market grocery. Now, it's important to note that OLCC has standard restrictions that they do place on off-premises locations in areas where there's evidence of problems with street drinking. And those are no sale of single containers, no sale of malt beverages over 6% alcohol by volume, no sale of wine over 13.8% volume, and oftentimes an operations close, like 10 p.m. We are deviating in our recommendations in order to best address the issues that are here in this area. Although some of the stores that are in this area, it's important to note, already have restrictions on them because there is an opportunity, because the OLCC recognizes certain areas as problem areas, if a new licensee comes in, that we will ask for restrictions. And those are typically the ones that will be placed. So now we're getting into really the nuts and bolts of what we will be recommending be forwarded to the OLCC to initiate the process. The first is that the licensee will not sell single containers of malt beverages with an exception. not including beverages in 22 to 24-ounce glass bottles brewed by breweries that fall under the federal definition of a small brewery for tax purposes under Section 5051A2 of Title 26 USC. The licensee will not sell malt beverages over 5.75% alcohol by volume, which, with the same exception. The licensee will not sell packages of multiple malt beverages that are larger than 12 ounces per container or packaged in less than 4 per package. Again, we use the Portland Patrol Incorporated reports and the information that we were able to gather. There's 462 reports to inform our recommendations. 87% of all of the incidents of street drinking were associated with large containers, that's 16 ounces and above. Microbrews, however, in 12 to 22 ounce containers, some have asked, why are we doing that exclusion? Because they were only evidenced to be part or contributing to the problem in 2% of the incidents. And the we had a lot of conversations with the California Brewers Association and the Oregon Brewers Association about the fact that 22-ounce containers in particular are breakthrough items for very small brewers. So we stood to disproportionately affect that particular industry for very little gain.
But could I ask you on that point, is it also true that those particular types of malt beverages are more expensive than the typical?
That is true.
So that has a contributing factor as well.
Most likely.
And the microbrews sell in 22 rather than 24-ounce containers?
Most of them are. It's not all, but a lot of them.
Thank you.
Additionally, the reason that we deviated and we went with 5.75 rather than 6% alcohol by volume, as the OLCC uses standardly, is because 25.4% of the incidents were between 5.75 and 6%, which is a substantial amount.
And what's an example of that kind of beverage?
Milwaukee's Best, Natural Ice, those kinds. Container sizes of products associated with the consumption on the street that were under 5.75, we really wanted to take a look at that as well. We're looking, of course, at the best recommendation possible for the most effective program, especially given the amount of resources that have already gone into this problem and also into this process. We found that 47.7% of incidents of street drinking that involved alcohol that's under 5.75 were in 16-ounce containers. That's pretty substantial. We've also been asked on several occasions, why not ban specific products? And the reason is we originally started to look at this. But first of all, the City Council of Seattle received their update on the effectiveness of their alcohol impact area, and manufacturers were simply rebranding the same products and restocking them. With the amount of resources that we are dealing with here and the types, and also that they're now looking to move more towards types of beverages as we are trying to do here by alcohol content and also container size. In addition, there's also new products that are coming on to into the market all of the time. For instance, in March, late March, early April, there was a new product that was released by Mike's Hard Lemonade, which is Mike's Harder Lemonade, which is 8.1% alcohol, and it comes in a 24-ounce can. Now, previously, that would not have been on our list, and I can guarantee you that they're not on any of Washington's lists. Also, again,
I'm not sure anybody watching, this is simply lemonade. That's all it is simply lemonade.
It's in a small container.
In a small container as well.
Now, although wine is only represented in 11% of the incidents within the PPI reports, it's an important component of this, of the alcohol impact area. The reason for that is that by not addressing the wine issues and the high alcohol content products and the container types that are favored, we will be in a position to completely undercut our ability to address the problem, as it will be a very easy substitution product. So we, of course, did our analysis of the wine incidents. First of all, I'll start with the recommendations. We're recommending that the licensees not sell wine over 14% alcohol by volume, not that they not sell wine packaged in removable bladders or flexible soft packages, and that they not sell wine in quantities greater than 2 liters per package. In our analysis, what we found was that 69% of the incidents involving wine also involve flexible bladders. And I'm not sure if you know exactly what I'm talking about when I'm saying that, but basically it's boxed wine without the box. You just simply remove the 3 to 5 liter bag of wine. It's called a space bag, I think. And then it's very flexible, very mobile, and very easy to hide, and it normally serves more than one individual. Of the remaining 31% of the incidents, most of those incidents involve wine over 14% alcohol by volume. The reason that we set it at 14% rather than 13.8 is because we heard from licensees that there were quite a few wines that were between the 13.8 and 14% alcohol that aren't evidenced to be part of the problem. And we wanted to allow, we didn't want to unintentionally grandfather those in. At the same time, getting it 14% alcohol or at the products that are above 14% alcohol allows us to address the fortified wine category, which is a big problem within the statistics for street drinking.
Can I just ask a question to make sure I'm following the math?
Absolutely.
So I believe you said earlier that 11% of the problem involves wine.
Yes, sir.
And so under this chart, of the 11%, 70% of the 11% involves wine with a flexible bladder.
Yes, sir.
So if you took that out, what you're left with is about, I may need your help with the math, about 3 to 4% of the overall problem relates to wine that's sold in a bottle over 14%.
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
And of that, it's fortified wine as distinguished from naturally fermented wine.
Absolutely.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Additionally, through our conversations with licensees, what we heard from a lot in talking with managers, talking with employees, was that there is an intimidation factor here, that they're not always aware of how to say no to someone who is intoxicated, who is attempting to purchase alcohol. Different from service permittees in restaurants or bars that serve alcohol, there is no mandatory component for education of clerks. So we're also requesting that mandatory training on the responsible service of alcohol be taken by all clerks employed at establishments in this particular area.
So forgive my ignorance on this, but maybe this is for our police team. If someone in a regulated store sells alcohol to someone who is obviously inebriated, that even my 6-year-old could tell, is that a crime?
It is.
So that it already is regulated, and you can't sell to someone who's inebriated?
Correct.
Okay.
Also, I wanted to talk a little bit more about the alcohol impact area results in Washington. They did see some very positive results. In Seattle, a 35% decrease in emergency medical service incidents involving alcohol. In Tacoma, their rate of increase in emergency medical calls was significantly less than in other parts of the city, although the entire city did experience an increase. There was little evidence of dispersion effects in either area. There was also a 21% decrease in admissions to the local detoxification center in Seattle. There were fewer chronic public inebriates and problems associated with chronic public inebriates, for instance, public urination, public defecation, those kinds of issues. There was also less trash and litter, and in both areas, community residents felt safer, and they had greater livability. And I want to stress that this really is the first step in this process, in a mandatory process. If accepted at the OLCC, if they accept a petition from the City of Portland for rulemaking, there will be a full public process in which individual licensees have the opportunity to ask for exemptions, be part of advisory committees, in which The OLCC convenes advisory committees and allows stakeholders to provide input on the recommended language. There's also an automatic review after 1 year. And now if you consider that we've been dealing with this problem for 10 years and have been engaged in this process for at least a year and a half, an automatic review after 1 year is pretty good to make sure that any unintended consequences or if anything comes up that we have not fully vetted out will be addressed at that time. And also, not only with the automatic review after 1 year, but any interested party can request a review at any time. I think that we have an obligation to put the best recommendation forward to the OLCC as possible. In all likelihood, the OLCC won't become more restrictive than the stipulations that we're asking for. We are known as one of the most livable cities in the United States, and a lot of the reasons for that is because we pay attention to issues like this, and we implement strategies that are innovative. And this is an untried tool. This is something that we can use to try to address this issue, and I think that we should. And I can answer any questions that you have.
Well, first, Teresa, I want to thank you for an outstanding PowerPoint. In fact, it's one of the best I'm going to show it to my bureaus because it is extremely helpful. And the nice part of it is you've laid out the case. And so I have a couple of slides. I want to ask you some questions for clarification.
Absolutely.
The first is a process question, and that is, in our normal way of doing business, if we have a matter like this before us and we want to amend it, we would take an amendment and see if there's a majority support, and then that would be passed on. Is there anything in the OLCV rulemaking that limits our ability to amend the proposals before us tonight?
Before us tonight, there are some procedural considerations. It appears that anything that comes up tonight and therefore there's an amendment that comes up as part of a discussion that happens related to the language, this is still a public meeting. There's still an opportunity to provide input. However, if we were to change the boundaries, it would require a full redo of the voluntary effort, which would take a substantial amount of time and would probably be about 6 to 9 months.
So other than the question of boundaries, we would technically be free to offer amendments tonight on the substantive proposal?
I would check with the city attorney, Ben. I believe was here.
I see someone nodding. Not Ben. You're not Ben. I got a lawyer posing as someone who... This is Ben. Maybe that was something in the grand glass.
You want me to come up
if you could,
this
Ben,
after the panel's concluded?
It's the mayor's call.
Any other discussion for these panelists?
I do. I just... But that's... I'll come back.
Then why don't we finish... Why don't we finish your... questioning of this panel. Then we'll bring up more fodder.
It's been a long day, I guess. My question to the Bureau goes back to the question of dispersal, which you alluded to in your testimony. I don't think I was on the council when we had the really hot discussions about drug and prostitution-free zones, but I know the council has taken a pretty clear position that they tend to disperse the illegal conduct and move it to some other neighborhood, and therefore there's been a preference for targeted law enforcement rather than the zone. And that's an instance where we're seeking to regulate otherwise unlawful behavior of a certain kind. My question is on this approach. Why doesn't this just disperse the problem? And for example, if I can't buy my malt liquor at the downtown Safeway and I had a drinking problem, why wouldn't I just get on the bus and go to 12th and Broadway and buy it there? What evidence do we have that wouldn't happen?
Well, I don't know that we really know the full extent. It's difficult for us to answer how great the dispersal effect may or may not be. A lot of the individuals who are chronic inebriates, in my experience, tend to stay in a fairly tight geographic area.
Yeah.
They don't tend to have motivation to walk great distances to obtain the alcohol that they prefer to drink. There is nothing in theory to stop them from jumping on transportation, although they would have to purchase a bus ticket to get where they need to go. They could ride Max or what have you to obtain other alcohol. Our big advantage, if we start to see that, is that we're able to manage that a little bit better because we don't, again, have the density of stores in other parts of the city outside of this alcohol impact area. We've got such a density of package stores that it's very difficult for us to identify one store as an offender that's greater than the store next door. As opposed to, we get a dispersal into, say, Northwest Portland, we have much fewer package stores that may choose to sell this product. And I think we're able to identify who those offending stores are in a much more efficient manner, and we're able to use our time, place, manner ordinance to address those stores in a fairly efficient way. We've done that with a couple of stores in the zone, but other than the two stores that we addressed directly, it was very difficult for us to discern who was selling these products to street drinkers. So I think we have that as an advantage. If we start to see some dispersion to other areas of the city, I think we are better equipped to identify which stores are most problematic and address them quickly through time, place, and manner, where we don't have that advantage in the downtown area.
Fair enough. And in page 4, the slide that compares malt beverages, wine, and distilled spirits. So part of what we're doing here is proposing to regulate the problem by through a market-based approach. We're going to restrict the supply of something in hopes that that curbs an unlawful conduct. I'm just curious, in relative terms, what's the different price point, like per whatever gallon you consume, as between malt beverages, wine, and distilled spirits?
That is actually not something that we have looked into. Typically, malt beverages are among the more inexpensive. Wine can also be fairly inexpensive. I mean, in any category, I guess, ounce for ounce, you'd probably spend more for distilled spirits. I think that depending on what products you're looking at and what container size would probably determine what the price point is for both malt beverage and wine.
I guess the last question I have, and I'm very eager to hear the testimony tonight, is Vancouver, Washington, do they have one of these zones?
They do.
Is it different in any way from what you're proposing?
Yes, it is. They implemented theirs in, I believe, 2006 or 2007, and they still have a more product-based alcohol impact area, although they have incorporated some container size, but they still have a product-based line, which we do not. We are going for a more objective criteria that has to do with alcohol by volume and container size.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, thank you all. Did you want to talk to Ben?
If Ben could just give us the guidance as to what we can and can't do, that would be helpful.
Ben Walters with the City Attorney's Office. As was identified previously, what the council is engaging in tonight is authorizing the filing of a petition with the OLCC to trigger a rulemaking by the commission under an existing rule developed by the OLCC, particularly for alcohol impact areas. It's not a rule that the OLCC to our ability to identify has ever exercised up to this point. And so, in part, we're reading between the lines to try and figure out how the OLCC might apply this. There are prerequisites to filing the petition as identified within the rule. One of those is that the city must undertake to hold a public hearing and obtain information regarding what is being proposed in terms of the regulations, and that there the petition must have information that supports the proposed restrictions. And so we would need to be able to identify, staff would need to be able to identify for any amendments whether or not there was information contained in the record, either developed previously or developed here tonight, in going forward to the OLCC, support for any proposed amendments.
So, and just to put that, I guess, in simpler terms, if we were to add a further enhancement of a restriction, then we'd have to have an evident a finding for that. But it sounds like we have more latitude. If, for example, a majority of the council believes that the prohibition of selling wine over 14% ABV is too broadly cast and needs to be more narrowly cast, we would have the right to do that, right? Because
It sounds like from
it's
the
expanding on the restrictions, it's a modifying the other way.
Right. I think that it could be fairly described as as a determination by the council that the restrictions should focus on another aspect of the problem rather than that element of it. Given the information gathered and then the council's evaluation of that information.
Thank you. Should we move to the sign-up list? All right, Sue.
All right, we have 16 speakers tonight. Will you come up three at a time? First will be Wendy Rahm, Alvin Rackner, Mike O'Callaghan. They'll be followed by Doug Peterson, Paulina Gustafson, and Rob Wheaton.
Good evening. Welcome to the City Council. We're glad that you're here. Please begin.
Thank you. My name is Wendy Rahm. Mr. Mayor and council members, thank you for letting us speak, and good evening. I have come with neighbors from several of the residential buildings in the downtown South Park Blocks area who are here to stand up in support of the alcohol impact proposal. Many of us here tonight came a couple of weeks ago to support then-Speaker Shirley Rackner. Shirley spoke eloquently of the noticeable downturn in livability in the downtown South Park Blocks area. We are becoming a passionate group of voters as we find ourselves aggressively approached by increasing numbers of drunken people in our neighborhood, many of whom are also littering and performing other offensive acts. We would like you to make the quality of life in our downtown area a higher priority. Speaking with a police officer one day, it became apparent to me that he was as bothered by this situation as we were. However, it was also clear to me that his hands were tied. Although this proposal will not solve all those problems, it is a step in the right direction. I'm sure you've seen the rash of articles in the press recently, so you are aware that Portland's reputation as a great tourist destination is taking a fast nosedive. You, our council members, must begin addressing these problems more effectively if this nasty descent is to be reversed. We understand that you will face pressures from some small businesses on this issue, but the economic impact of taking Portland off the list of great places to visit could have an even more serious impact on these same businesses as well as on many others. So we urge you all to vote for this proposal. Thank you.
Thank you all for coming down.
I'm Alvin Rackner. I'm a neighbor of Wendy's and a neighbor of the people waiting here who may or may not stand. And I've lived downtown in Portland for 5 years. We moved here from the West Hills because we wanted, partly because of age and retirement, and we wanted to participate in the cultural life of the downtown, the shops, the restaurants, the social diversity. And in the main, we love it. However, as Wendy's mentioned, we too experience a serious deterioration in the quality of life downtown. We've called the police at times when we've seen people in serious distress. They seem to be drunk. Sometimes the police respond, sometimes they don't. We've called the Portland Patrol. We've called Cheers. Sometimes they respond. Sometimes we get an answer from a telephone machine saying we'll call you back. We don't get a call back. So that's been rather frustrating. Oftentimes, because I like to shop at Nordstrom's in various places, I and my wife will walk through the park blocks, and we've stopped walking between Main and Salmon because it's a terrible situation there of people who are drunk on some kind of product, littering the area, and very often obscene and generally unpleasant, broken bottles, cans, trashed food around on the ground, food wrappers, people passed out in doorways beyond that. We all know that scene. I'd like to add one other dimension. We have a granddaughter living in our building with us. She's a 15-year-old. She was excited to move downtown. And something happens with her that doesn't happen with me. I guess I'm not so pretty. She gets obscene comments from drunken people on the street, and she will no longer go into the park blocks. It's terribly offensive and frightening to her. I'm an old curmudgeon. I don't get frightened quite that easily, but I do find it very unpleasant, and I'm very disturbed that I have a granddaughter who's gotten to be afraid to go out on the street in Portland. And I've got to go almost through that area, that unpleasant area, to get to Director's Park, which is a beautiful and wonderful place to be. It seems to me that one of the basic functions of government is to provide safety and security for its citizenry. And it seems to me that we're losing the battle, and it often seems like anarchy downtown to me. And I certainly hope that this city council will take whatever steps are necessary to support this movement.
So just we have big issues. We have massive cuts from Salem of social service programs that shows up on Portland streets. And I'm inclined to support this because I think it will be a useful response. But I also don't want anyone to be left with the illusion that things aren't potentially going to get tougher before they get better. The cuts that we're looking at for social service programs from the state are significant. And I know you have compassion in addition to concern about these issues, and the city council last year had a group of a room full of people that were saying very different things about our streets and sidewalks. So we do try to strike the balance, and I think that with your help we can get there, but we got some serious cuts staring us in the face, and I just want to make sure that we have that at top of mind as well. Sir.
Yeah, Michael O'Callaghan, thank you for the opportunity to address you again. I want to speak as for alcoholics, okay? Subgroup probably isn't represented here. You guys think you're going to stop me from drinking? Wow, how absurd. Thank you. Now, something I would like to say in addition here is there is a problem. We all know there's a problem. I've traveled to probably 32 different countries, and I have never seen anything like this anywhere. Okay? There's a problem. And the fundamental problem is people have nowhere to go. Okay? Now, I want to thank you, Mayor. You can see the latest Mercury here. For consistently enforcing our laws against the homeless and doing a sweep of our camp, okay, and throwing 15 people who were shelterless, that built shelter out in the street without any citation, only warnings. Nobody was cited for any law violation at all, just more harassment and intimidation. And I would hold each one of you council members responsible also. This is a bulk package here. Everybody's responsible, okay? And I take issue, Commissioner Fish about reject large-scale encampments. I don't know what you mean by large-scale. There were 15 people that were here. One was in a wheelchair. One was had a heart attack.